Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. I think it's about time for me to give you the phone number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Hey, Cyrus, if TikTok had been around when you were an impressionable Ute, do you think you would have been into it?
I shudder to think of what would have happened to me if social media and the internet in my pocket. The internet didn't exist at all when I was a kid.
No.
But I don't think I'd be standing where I am now. I think I would have been a victim to circumstance.
I think you're probably right. And I'm not saying that about you per se, but I imagine what would my life have been like if this had been available, just so readily available. You mentioned a computer in your pocket, the internet in your pocket. You know, that's the portal into.
The easily accessible bad things just constantly at my fingertips as a child. I just honestly, that would not have been good for me.
No, I think you're right, and I would say the same for myself. I think about this often when I consider what TikTok is doing. And the reason, everyone, that we're talking about this is because in between programs, Cyrus and I, we do a lot of show prepping. Kind of, it's a rolling show prep. And it's astonishing, not in a good way, but it's astonishing just how much really terrible stuff there is out there on TikTok. And when I stop and think about how the kids are all over that, it just makes me shudder. It's like a window into hell, if you ask me. A lot of it, anyway. So, parents, please be really careful. And if at all possible, just ban it from your kids. Don't let them be on it, because I know everyone else is on it. But if you want to, okay, how about this? If you don't believe me, or if you think I'm Mr. Wet Blanket, or you think I'm over-exaggerating, or anything like that, just go on to Twitter. If you have a Twitter account, so much the better, but you don't have to have a Twitter account. Just go on twitter.com/libsoftiktok. And it's a how would I describe this? It's a Twitter feed that follows the insanity and curates it. That's a very, very trendy term nowadays. It curates this insanity for you, and it brings it to your attention so you can see selections on an ongoing basis, many times a day, different clips of things that teachers, for example, are posting on Twitter, or rather on TikTok, and their subversive, smirky, smug comments about how they're going to pull the wool over your eyes and they're going to do what they want to do with your kids, regardless of what you think about that. That's just a small sliver of what goes on.
We can't possibly be watching TikTok as much as our kids are. I just quickly Googled average amount of time on TikTok, and the user statistics from TikTok say 52 minutes a day. And I bet for a lot of kids, it's a lot more than that.
I bet.
But 52 minutes, that's more than two sitcoms.
Well, but, that's true. If you think in terms of
if you want to measure it,
that used to be the big bugaboo. I remember in the 70s how certain sectors of more conservative society were very up in arms about how much time kids spent in front of TVs, and that was valid. I mean, there was an excessive amount of time spent in front of the TV, and that's passive. You're just sort of passively soaking it in. It's not active learning the way it is when you're reading a book, for example. And TikTok is that on steroids. And it's not just TikTok. I mean, we could indict other platforms of social media, which makes me ambivalent, because there's some aspects of social media that I really value. And I can see there's a lot of good, or potentially a lot of good. But there's just so much bad stuff. So I just wanted to give a little public service announcement. Parents, if you need a little encouragement to stand firm and not let your kids get sucked down that rabbit hole, And if you want to not take my word for it, I'm encouraging you, just look up libs of TikTok. And it's not all about school teachers and their subversive antics in the classroom. It covers the waterfront. You'll be amazed at what you see. And it's a variety of things. If you open a window into hell, I mean, you'd be surprised what you might see. Nothing pornographic, don't get me wrong. It's not as though you're going to be assaulted with images or something that would inflame your imagination or cause you to sin. I would never suggest anything like that. But this is just a sampling that is the mission of this Twitter feed. You know, I don't know who's behind it. Actually, I do. There's a woman behind it who I think she's just a concerned citizen. So she's the one who does this. I remember reading an interview with her a couple of weeks ago. But the main thing is, if you think, yeah, Patrick Madrid, he's just exaggerating again, just look at it. And you tell me if I'm exaggerating. Cyrus, do you think I'm exaggerating?
No, not at all. This is a real warning. If you are a parent with young kids and they don't have phones yet, don't give them phones. Yeah. Don't do it. And if you...
Man, you're singing my tune. I'll tell you what.
If you're a parent and you have older kids and you've already given them phones, I don't know what to tell you. This is a constant battle in my house.
Yeah.
So I wish I would have listened to Patrick Madrid.
You can listen to Patrick Madrid from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday right here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I've had some practice.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Well, let's get to some phone calls. Thank you, Cyrus. I'm with you on this. You have my solidarity. Your kids are still in the house. Mine are all grown up, but now they have kids of their own, and they're dealing with that issue with their kids, my grandchildren. So I definitely still have skin in the game. But I wanted to just mention this for the sake of you parents who might need a little encouragement. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Caesar in Hemet, California, a town I know very well. Good morning, Caesar.
Hey, Patrick. I was just commenting that I'm using that platform to represent a Relevant Radio. So,
which platform are you using?
Are not really, TikTok.
Oh,
and
does that work?
My kids. Well, this is the thing. I'm trying to do something with my kids. So the Sunday liturgy, I have my son reenacted with the favorite character. He likes Spider-Man, so I'm pretty much teaching him, you know, the Bible, basically. So okay. Every Sunday we'll just go through it, and then we just show Relevant Radio. You know, it's thrown out there. So I'm
so wait, does he like do a dramatic reenactment of a Bible scene, and you film it and it gets posted on TikTok? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically. So he's a narrator, you know. So he was just. You have to check it out. It's kind of hard for me to explain. So far, it's coming out pretty good. I mean, it's two of my
Send
boys.
Send me a link.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll do that.
If you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, in the upper left, kind of right below the title of the show, you'll see three blue boxes. One of them says contact. If you click the contact box, you could send me an email. And I would love to take a look at it. So your sons are pushing out on TikTok Bible themes that they reenact as Spider-Man. That's the part I'm not sure about. Are they? Is he dressed as Spider-Man, or what's going on?
Yeah, it's one of my sons is dressed as Spider-Man. My other son is filming, and I'm just I have my daughter helping out with the wardrobe and stuff like that, and I'm just taking them out places, and we're just practicing. So this barely started today. So
as Sly and the Family Stone would say, it's a family affair. I like it. So what kind of traction, what kind of reaction are these videos getting on TikTok?
They're getting a lot of views, a little bit of likes. But again, we just barely started this Sunday, so we'll see where it goes from there. And you know,
why don't you tell your son to dress up as Patrick Madrid, and you know, go get a big bushy mustache at a costume store and reenact the Patrick Madrid show?
I'm gonna try that. If not, we'll just get a mustache for the Spider-Man.
Just get him a Tom Selleck mask. Don't you think, Cyrus? That would work in a pinch. Wouldn't
That's
it?
Actually not a bad idea.
Oh. Nice. All right, I'm obedient to that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm excited to hear that you're, first of all, that your kids are like missionaries in that howling wilderness of TikTok. Boy, do I believe that we need to be there, not as consumers, but as missionaries going into this howling wilderness of confusion and shining the light of Christ in TikTok. And, you know, for that matter, Facebook and YouTube. And thank God there are people who are already doing that, but we need more. So this is a very interesting twist, and I'm happy to hear about it, Caesar.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, Patrick, you have a good day, and thank you for what you do.
Likewise. Enjoy your breakfast burrito today. But, of course, it's Friday, so no meat. Thanks, Caesar. 888-914-9149. Just a reminder, everybody, Fridays during Lent, no meat. No meat. You can have shrimp, that's true. I saw an interesting article that came out written by a priest in the last few days reminding people, you know, it kind of defeats the purpose if on Fridays during Lent, or Fridays for the rest throughout the year, for that matter, if you just dig into some really succulent fish dishes or, you know, very elaborate seafood meals, it defeats the purpose of abstaining from meat on Friday. I mean, technically, yeah, you can have it because it's not meat, but the idea is to be penitential. So one thing I've started doing, I don't want to be overly personal here, but I've started making Fridays vegan, vegetarian, no kind of meat or anything. No shrimp, no fish, because I do like that stuff.
No milk?
I don't drink much of milk, no.
No cream really in your coffee?
Milk. I use a non-dairy creamer. See, you're not going to catch me easily.
No cheese?
I do eat cheese, yeah, on a regular
basis. Not vegan.
That's true. Yes, that's true. But you know what I found, Cyrus? I found that the more I eliminate meat from my diet altogether, the better it is. Not that I don't have any meat at all, because I like pork chops.
Are you totally deranged?
No, not totally. Not totally. But I find that it helped, for me anyway, I'm just throwing this out there. For me personally, I find that by, even like on a Friday or Saturday, I don't do this every Friday, but I'm sorry, not Fridays, not Saturdays. I don't do this every Friday, but I found that more and more, if I can turn a day into just a vegetarian day where there's no meat at all of any kind, even seafood, it just helps me kind of focus more on the penitential dimension of the whole thing. So I don't know, it may not be for everybody, but it's helpful to me. Let's go to Corrine now in Madera, California. Hi, Corrine. Wow. It's not what I was expecting. Corrine, are you there?
I'm sorry.
There you are.
Patrick.
That didn't sound like you just now.
No, it was my dog. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
Yes. Yes, Patrick, I have a question. I have a granddaughter who's 5, and ever since she was 4, she has asked me why Mary doesn't wear shoes, that her feet are bare. And I've asked around, and I got a good answer, but from a bishop, and he said, because of her humility and simplicity. And I just don't know how to explain that to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep in mind, that's a very interesting question. Keep in mind, of course, that what you're considering is artistic depictions of Mary. And the artistic depiction of Mary is from what was in the mind of the artist. And that's not the same thing as reality, obviously. So, although we could speculate upon this, we don't know to what extent Our Lady wore footwear. Did she wear sandals? Was there a kind of shoe? And there were shoes. I mean, sandals were probably far more common in those days in that area. But people did have shoes. I mean, you can find examples of frescoes from the ancient Roman times, certainly coinciding with Jesus, where you see a man wearing shoes and socks. So, in fact, on one of the more recent editions of Wheelock's Latin Grammar that I have in my library, because I love the study of Latin, The fresco on the very front cover is of a man who is probably alive at the time of Jesus, and he's wearing shoes and socks. So the reason I mention it, Corrine, is because we don't know what Our Lady wore on her feet. That was not revealed to us. We don't know what color her eyes were. We don't know. There's so much about her and the Lord that is just not revealed to us because it wasn't meant for us to know. So we could speculate that Our Lady was barefoot. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. So I would just offer that as a point to consider as you're talking to your granddaughter, because she needs to understand that what she's really wondering about is why in these artistic depictions of Mary, why do some artists portray her without shoes? It doesn't mean that she necessarily went around without shoes. Do you see the distinction I'm making?
Yeah, I do. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So perhaps we know that Our Lady was extremely humble. And so perhaps in her humility, she was barefoot, maybe also as an expression of her poverty of spirit. But I have to think, if we look at Jesus, for example, that given all of the walking that he did from place to place, and if you've ever been to Israel, you know how hilly it is, and in some cases mountainous, and Jesus was walking from place to place. Mm-hmm. And I would have to think that he was wearing shoes, or probably not shoes, but probably sandals. So we just don't know. And you're free to imagine it however you wish.
Okay. And I just wanted to also mention, she's a special granddaughter, and it was last year around Christmas time. And I was telling her, Christmas is not all about Santa and gifts. And she's like, I know. She says, if you have Jesus, you are never lost. So she really touches sweet. My heart.
And she's how old? You say she's five?
She's five, yeah.
Beautiful. Well, my advice, if you want some free advice, would be check out Holy Heroes. Their website is holyheroes.com. I have no connection with them. I benefit in no way from them. But there are lots of CDs and other things for the kiddos just her age that can help them really understand who Jesus is, who Mary is, how to be holy at a young age. And the younger, the better for these lessons to sink in. She sounds like she's already thinking a lot about these issues.
Yeah, and she was also born on the Feast of St. Therese, which is a saint that I've always been following.
That's great.
So,
well, God bless you. You have been blessed with a special grandchild. That's wonderful. I hope our conversation was helpful, Corrine. I've got to take a break. Thank you. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. A line is now open, and if you call 888-914-9149, you can grab it. 888-914-9149. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy a little Sly and the Family Stone. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All right, let's go. Love that bass line. 888-914-9149. We have lines open right now, so this would be the perfect opportunity for you to jump in with your comment or question. 888-914-9149. We'll go over to Oceanside now and talk to Carol. Good morning, Carol.
Yes, Patrick. I just had a comment to make. You want to know what color Our Lady's eyes are, or you want to know what she wore on her feet? Just look at the tilma of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Well, not exactly, because keep in mind that is not divine revelation in the form of, say, scripture or general revelation. That's a private revelation. And I have a life-size photograph image of the tilma in my living room, in my home. So I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. But that is Our Lady appearing in the form of an indigenous woman at that time, wearing the clothes that would be recognizable to Aztecs and other indigenous peoples at that time. That's not a representation of what Our Lady actually looked like. And if you consider the various other apparitions of Our Lady, those would be different in terms of how she's dressed and what color was her hair or what clothing did she wear. There's a great variety there. And so those are not intended to be a definitive, what's the word I'm looking for? That's not a definitive statement on what Our Lady actually looked like or what she actually wore.
I don't know of any other appearances or artwork or anything else that was created by other than humans except for that one.
Yeah, that's true. But if you keep in mind the fact that the way she appeared on the tilma was a way to be understandable, intelligible to the people there. And when she's appeared in other places, the descriptions given, for example, in Fatima or in Lourdes or other Marian apparition sites, the descriptions of her are different from how she's depicted in the tilma. But even still, the tilma is...
They had the artist's license as to how they painted the picture or created the statue or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, that notwithstanding, I understand the point you're making, but it doesn't actually mean that that is how Our Lady actually looked in the land of Israel 2,000 years ago.
Well, most of the pictures I've seen that other than Our Lady of Guadalupe, they show her as a blue-eyed, blonde-haired, very light-skinned person, and that's not the way the people looked in the Holy Land.
You might be surprised to know that I did a segment on this very topic some years ago, and the blue eyes are very common in the Levant, which we know today as Lebanon. And so blue eyes and fair skin, scientists have shown have gone back thousands of years in that area. And so I'm not saying this to you personally, but there are those out there who have a very facile understanding of this. And they insist that there's no way that either Our Lady or Jesus could have had blue eyes or could have had fairer skin. And scientifically, that's really not the case.
Well, I'm not saying it's impossible to think that blue eyes and blonde hair were there, but I'm just saying the majority of the people you see in the pictures are dark. You know, they're not dark like a black person, but, you know, they're mm-hmm. darker skinned than we are here in the States, and they have dark hair, usually mm-hmm. curly.
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's all very interesting. I grant you that. And one day you and I hopefully will be seeing the Lord face to face and Our Lady, and we can resolve these
questions. Right, and then we'll know what
questions.
Color her eyes are, what she wore on her feet.
That's right. That's right. Well, hey, Carol,
well,
thank you.
Have a good day. God bless you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, that'll be interesting when we get to heaven. So many questions. One of the questions I intend to ask, I'd like to find Adam and just say, why'd you eat that apple? What was going through your mind, Father Adam, if you don't mind me asking? Now that we're all in heaven and everything's great, and all the unpleasantness is behind us, can I just ask you one question, Father Adam? Why'd you eat that apple? That's going to be an interesting conversation. I bet I won't be the first person to ask him that question either. Let's go now to Gregory in Los Angeles. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning, Patrick. I was telling your screener, from my perspective, this whole ongoing struggle with abortion and all that goes with it, is what I call the prerequisites have been neglected for a very long time. Growing up in an era of what they call it the new permissiveness, when the sexual revolution in this country was starting to break out and across uh-huh. the world, I wasn't an active participant in that for a number of reasons, health issues especially. I was not able to participate in the, like in my way I call it, I was in the galleys and the galleries in my life growing okay. up. So I got to see a lot of this. And what I did experience in my time was at least understanding the fidelity of that sexual ability between men and women. And what do you do with all that? I saw that in the time going to school when the kids were going to what they call Health 101. And a lot of these young ones that in my generation, they were just thirsting for some direction, you know, ideas of, well, how do you deal with all those urges to exercise that affinity between, you know, the sexes? And I got some of that from my Catholic upbringing, my family, and so on. So there was some structure there. So I guess the question I have is, how do you start to advance those thoughts with the current generation? Is it something that you have to bring on, you know, for every generation? It doesn't mm-hmm. just, it does just not magically come along. You have to have structure in the upbringing of your females and males so they understand that. So before they get involved in a very active, attraction to be sexually active, maybe too early for them, but they're there in the midst of it all. Boom, then boom, you've got, quote unquote unintended pregnancies. That's what I'm getting about the prerequisites. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of emphasis on that in this point in time. What are your suggestions about how to bring that into the current generation's thinking before they get themselves into these problems with quote unquote unintended pregnancies?
Right. That's a fascinating question that you're asking. And to be sure, there are many, not thankfully, not most, but many of the public school teachers who are actively working against the very thesis that you have here. They want the kids to be sexualized as early as possible. We know this. So that's what we're up against, among other things. So there's also the culture and the ways in which media pushes eroticism and sexual images and encouraging them to experiment, etc. So it's different, certainly very different now than it was when I was growing up. And when I was a kid in the 60s, you might be a little older than me, I don't know. But as a kid in the 60s, I was oblivious to the sexual revolution that was going all around me. But for the generation older than mine, I mean, it must have been very difficult for them, even in those days, without social media, without the internet, without cell phones and all that. So to your point, again, I think it's a fascinating question. So my reaction off the cuff, Emmanuel, would be that one way to speak to this generation that has already been devastated by the sexual revolution is to speak to them in a way that doesn't sound like moralizing. And here's what I mean by that. If you can appeal to somebody's innate understanding of natural law, that I think is an end run around many of the barriers that modern people today, of all ages, but especially younger people, have that would prevent them from listening to or hearing or being interested in maybe a more traditional way of explaining this. So here's what I mean by this. Natural law, which is not the laws of nature, natural law, among other things, and primarily is the revelation by God in the way things are, kind of in their very being, that shows us what they're intended for, and that things have goals. They tend toward certain ends or certain goals. They are goal oriented, and so if you can help somebody begin to look at just things in general, including the human body, you can, I think, get a little foothold there by raising this important theme in the minds of somebody, and that is that if you use something in a way that's contrary to what it's made to do, you will eventually destroy it. And this is true of artifacts that we make. So if you used your iPhone to hammer a nail in the wall to hang a picture, that'd be kind of stupid. I mean, you could do it, and you might be able to hammer a few nails before your iPhone breaks. But soon enough, you'll destroy the iPhone because it wasn't made to hammer nails. Hammers are made to hammer nails. iPhones were not. iPhones have other goals that they tend toward. The same is true not only of artifacts, but the same is true of natural objects, and especially the human body. So if you can get the person to start realizing that this is true, and they will quickly realize it. It's not at all difficult to perceive the truth of this. And then to ponder, well, what does this mean for me personally with my body? What does this mean? What is this natural law? Even if you never even use the term natural law, you don't have to say those words. But people can very quickly grasp the fact that things that are goal-oriented, if they're not achieving the goal that they're tending toward, there's something wrong. And if they're being used in a way that's contrary to the goal that they're tending toward, it's very destructive. So they can begin pondering, well, what implications does this have for me personally and my body? And if I'm using my body in a way that is contrary to its goals that are inherent in my own physiology, as a man, for example, or a woman, inherent in her own physiology are certain goals, I would talk about those things. And you'll notice that although you're kind of unveiling for that person an aspect of God's revelation to us through the natural order, you don't have to mention the word God. You don't have to quote the Bible. You don't have to sound like you're a catechism. And these are concepts that I guarantee many people never even think about. But when you start talking to them about it, it begins to click. And then maybe if there's more and more opportunity to have further conversations, then you can talk more specifically about how the sexual component of the human body is incomplete in itself. So every single person listening to the sound of my voice right now, you included, Gregory, you have a complete nervous system. You have a complete circulatory system. You have a complete digestive system, etc. But you don't have a complete reproductive system. You have half of a reproductive system. And your half of the reproductive system doesn't really make any sense when you consider the components of the male reproductive system. It doesn't really make any sense. What is this here for? Why is what's the point of these things? The only way to make any sense out of it is if you have recourse to the complementarity of the female reproductive system. And then we can see that these reproductive systems are ordered toward a certain goal, which is procreation. Now, that doesn't mean that procreation must take place or that it will take place every time these two sexes come together. But we can see that even just in the way our bodies are made, there is a goal in mind. And so when you use your body in a way that is contrary to that goal, and I think people can who are old enough can figure out what I'm alluding to here, you are going to destroy yourself in due time, physically, not to mention morally and spiritually. So perhaps that would be one way to go about it, Gregory, to start down that path and speak in these categories that people are not used to hearing about, but which they can readily understand if somebody just explains it to them. Now, somebody who did a great job of that is Pope John Paul II, and he called it the theology of the body. It's become a kind of cottage industry now. And there's, you know, plenty of people who are writing books. So it's all very derivative of what he wrote, but it's necessary for people to be able to understand it. And the average 15-year-old is no way ever going to sit down and read a treatise on this by Pope John Paul II. They just won't. They're not going to read it. So I guess we can be grateful for the cottage industry of theology of the body, because there are people who are taking that information and making it accessible, as you're calling out for, to a modern audience that's not used to thinking in these ways, but readily understands it when it's presented to them. So there's my suggestion. And thank God that Pope John Paul II did so much work as he did. It's a very important part of the Catholic message. And what's interesting, and I'll just leave you on this final note before I take a break. What's interesting is that this has been around for a lot longer than Pope John Paul II. I mean, he systematized it in the writings. They originally were speeches or sermons that he was giving that were eventually compiled into this book form. But he was drawing upon earlier Catholic writers like St. Thomas Aquinas, who were great proponents of the natural law and natural law theory, but they were even more inaccessible to the modern person. So he made their thoughts on these things more accessible, and now other people are doing it the next step. So I think that's going to be a big part of what you and I need to do in the future. Thank you. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Nookie Ma, I got me a radio show. I haven't done that in a while. Did you know?
Hey, Ma. Cyrus? I can see my Ma's house from up here. Hey, Ma, get off the dang roof. dumb.
Inflation is now costing the average U.S. household an extra $296 a month. A month. The New York Post has an article, and we'll get it posted for you. I don't know if you're feeling the pinch at the pump or if you're paying more for groceries. I mean, I know you are, but I don't know to what extent you're feeling the pain yet. Inflation is costing you an additional $296.45 in expenses as rising food and fuel costs stretch budgets, according to calculations provided by Moody's Analytics. They crunched the numbers after the latest Department of Labor data showed that consumer prices jumped about 8%, 7.9%. But hey, let's round it, right? Everything's going up, so let's round it up. This figure was arrived at by comparing the average U.S. household spending last month to what would have been spent in 2018 and 2019 when inflation was just 2.1%. Ah, the good old days.
Back when I was a kid.
And inflation was only 2.1%. But Moody's says, unfortunately, things are going to get worse before they get better. Higher energy prices in March are going to boost the amount that you spend. Consumer prices have continued to rise even as the Biden administration has largely blamed the problem on supply chain disruptions and corporate greed during the COVID-19 pandemic. Some economists have argued out of control government spending has pushed inflation higher. And now we've got the Russia-Ukraine thing going on. That's going to cause gas prices to skyrocket. It's already over $7 a gallon in California. How high will it go? Moody's says it's going to go higher. And maybe a lot higher. So word to the wise, check it out. And, you know, prepare. As you know me, I always encourage people to put a little extra aside so that if things get really difficult for a time anyway, you'll be in a good position not only to take care of yourself and your family, but also you can help other people and be generous to them. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Emilio in Phoenix. Good morning, Emilio. I can hear you breathing, Emilio.
Hello there.
Maybe Emilio went to sleep.
Bueller.
I thought I was going to hear a third one.
Bueller.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can sort out Emilio and come back to him. Emmanuel in Minneapolis, thank you for calling and welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you very much. I tried to call you last week. Didn't succeed. I'm 58 years old, so whatever I say, it's the truth. So I'm an Orthodox, but I go to Catholic church the last 5 years. Okay. I love it. It's open, you know, the Mass, 2-3 times a Mass is something very different than Orthodox, which is very, very, very good. And also, I go to adoration. I work as a substitute teacher, and after I get out of school at 5 o'clock, that's before COVID, I go to adoration, and I love it. Anyways, yeah. When I do that, you know, they welcomed me, and one of elderly gave me a prayer book. I'm sure you know it's my treasured Catholic prayers book. I have it. I'm reading from it now. Okay. It's published by Sister of Charity of Our Lady, Mother of the Church. Mm-hmm. When I was reading that 2 years ago, something happened, which I don't want to get into, but I want to ask you, tell you what happened, and you tell me if there is a sign or anything. Okay. About 6 months ago, I keep this prayer book always in my pocket, at least once a day I read it. And in my glove compartment, I think there is a jojoba oil, some lotions that I use for my hand.
Tell me about the book itself. You mentioned that something happened while you were reading it. That sounds interesting. What happened?
Okay. This jojoba oil spilled on it, and I immediately cleaned it and, you know, with paper towel and everything because I love it. Then that oil just keep on spreading, and that prayer book is completely wet now. It doesn't drip any oil, but it's just, you can't even separate some of the pages now.
So the oil, where's the oil coming from? Did it come out of the bottle and now it's on the book?
No, it did come from the bottle, I believe, and I cleaned it.
Okay.
But, and I took it out, put it in my pocket, sometimes in my backpack, but it just completely sprayed. It just became too much. Now the whole book is wet.
Okay. How about this? Why don't you take the book, conduct an experiment, and put it in the sunlight, maybe spread some newspapers or paper towels or something like that, and place it in an area that's completely dry in the sun, maybe outside, if you know, on the patio or something like that, and let it sit in the sun all day and see what happens. And if by the end of the day it's still covered with oil, then you've got something interesting that you can look into further. But it may be that if you set it in the sun in some warm, dry place, that whatever oil that is that accumulated will, you know, dry up or get hard or something like that. And then you'll know that there's some physical explanation for it. I would try to test it that way a few different ways first and see what happens. And maybe you'll find, oh, okay, well, now I understand. It just had a lot of oil on it and there was nowhere for the oil to go. But when I put it in the sun, it dried out and it's not a miracle. But, you know, it's anything's possible. God does work miracles. So I'm not saying it couldn't be something like that. But I would try to exhaust every natural way of explaining it first.
I did that, Patrick. I did. That's what okay. I want to tell you. Okay, about 3 weeks ago, I took it out, and I want to dry it. I put a pen in every page and put it for 4 days, day and night, in front of a heater on the floor. Okay. When I did that after 4 days, it kind of dried a little bit, but as I told you, I have another one that I am using. And I started seeing the same oil in the same spot on that book. And I showed it to my boys. And I said, I saw this. I want you to have it and see what happened. And my son, who is a college student, was carrying it for a week in his backpack. After that, let's see it. Let's take it out. And we did put some paper sign where the waste okay. is. But when he gave it to me right now, it's in my hand. This one also came out completely oily.
Okay, this is interesting. I don't diminish. I mean, this is not something you see very often, if at all. So how about this? Why don't you, in a search for an explanation, since you've tried these other things that would, you would think that if it was purely natural, that oil would have dried up, etc., take it to your parish priest. And say, this is a phenomenon that I don't know how to explain. Can I have you take a look at it and see what you think? And maybe he can say, well, we have a, you know, professor of physics in the parish, or professor of biology, or, you know, chemistry or something. Maybe he can take a look at it. So there may be some other people who can consider this and then see where it goes. I mean, if something supernatural is happening, that to me seems the best way to find out what's going on. To get your parish priest involved. And maybe he'll say, well, I'll send it to the bishop. You never know. Anything's possible.
All right. Thank you. Thank
You're
you very
welcome.
Much, sir.
May I ask you, if you don't mind, I'm trying to pinpoint where your accent is from, and
I'm
guessing...
from Ethiopia.
Ethiopia. Yeah, okay. It's okay. I was guessing Nigeria, but I'm wrong.
No. Ethiopia.
All right. Well, welcome to the Catholic Church. I hope you enjoy your times there when you go to Mass.
Oh, I love it. I love your show. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Very interesting. How about Dennis now in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware? Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
God bless you. You are truly a gift to us. I found you about a year ago. And my phone is programmed to your station every day.
Thank you.
I find I'm probably about your age, maybe a couple of years older. Excuse me, I'm out of breath. I'm actually painting while listening to you. So,
okay. Get down anyway, off the ladder, though. We don't want you to have any accidents while you're painting.
No, my wife said get on the ladder. And then but anyway.
All right.
I have found you such a help in my journey towards Christian perfection. And I have so much more to learn and experience. And I want to thank you just for your wisdom and your insight, and your teachings. And you truly are a godsend and a blessing to us all. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now to my question. During the Lenten season, I try to listen to Revelations. Read Revelations. And I've read it. And some of it makes sense. most of it is so abstract, it seems, and I don't want to say like Star Wars, war-ish, mm-hmm. but you're reading about all these different visions that the apostle, I can't think of his name, has seen, but it's just very, very abstract and very tough to understand revelations. And
that's true.
I just need some direction on this, some insight to clarify and simplify, you know, what is being said, because it is very abstract. And with all these images and visions that are given to us, it's like it's almost too abstract to even comprehend or understand.
That is your insight. Sure. Yeah, that's for sure. And what's interesting is, I think it's interesting anyway, is that countless people have puzzled over this book and other books in the Old Testament, like Joel, for example, and Daniel, in the areas where those books get into the end times. And it's been an inexhaustible labor on the part of countless people to try to understand, what do these things mean? What are the scrolls? What are the bowls? What are the trumpets? What is this flaming mountain that crashes into the ocean and poisons a third of the waters, et cetera, et cetera? What are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, pestilence and war, et cetera? What are these things, and how will we know them if we happen to be alive when these things begin to happen? How will we recognize them for what they really are? And so there are countless theories out there. Many of them have been proven false, because some say, well, this pale horse or this red horse equals Hitler, or this equals whatever, and things come and go, and it turns out not to be that. So I don't claim to know in any definitive way. I have some theories about what I think they might mean. But at the moment, that's about all we can do. Now, there's been a great deal of scholarship, for sure, that has taken place in the Catholic world, for example, and I'm attentive to those things, especially those that deal with, say, misunderstandings about the rapture that some people have. So for me, what I try to do is to follow what are the people saying who are careful and quality scholars, people who have some basis for doing the scholarship, and not merely because, you know, they have an armchair interest in it, but there may be some academic foundation for their studies, etc. I try to pay attention to it. But my sense of it is that the Lord did not want these matters to be clear to us until the time comes, and then they'll become clear. So maybe it will only be in the midst of the tribulation that will arise at the time of the Antichrist that we will actually be able to say, oh, okay, that seems to be the second seal, or the second trumpet, or the second bowl being poured out. In the meantime, it seems it's just really speculation. Some of it's speculation based upon good scholarship, but it's still speculative, if you ask me. So if you're looking for some good books on the end times, I would start with publishers like Ignatius Press. And if you just do a little sleuthing online, Will Catholics Be Left Behind comes to mind. That's a book by Carl Olson that tackles the rapture part of the end times prophecies that are out there. And it does get into some of the other issues, but that I think is a very sober and well-researched book. There's another book I'm blanking on the name. You know what I'll do, Dennis? During the break, I'll try to find the name of another one of the two of those books. But they're out there. Ignatius Press is a good... Well, I'll find out for you on that, Cyrus. Dennis, thank you. I appreciate the call and the kind words. I really do. I'll be back with more of The Patrick Madrid Show right after this.